From the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. Today we bring you a repeat airing of some of our favorite recent segments, including our interview with Emmy-nominated actress Tracee Ellis Ross from Black-ish. She talks about advocating for the character she plays with the show's writers and directors.
What am I, just playing ping pong right here? Just sitting in between because I got dressed and put makeup on? Like, what's my point of view in the scene? And if that's pointed out to them and it's something that hasn't been noticed, it's fixed.
And why is a play about climate change being produced at a horse ranch in the San Fernando Valley? All that coming up on The Frame. We'll start today with Tracee Ellis Ross, one of the stars of the ABC comedy Black-ish. In the series, she plays Rainbow, a doctor who's the wife and mother in the Johnson family.
We've set those kids up to continue down the road that we paved. For them, blue collar is going backwards.
All right, and we're not crazy for wanting our son to go to college.
And grad school. I went to grad school, okay? And you want him to do as well as his best parent.
Really?
What?
You choose right now to go there with that?
This past season, Ross also directed an episode of Black-ish, which tackled the faltering marriage between her character and her husband, played by Anthony Anderson. Black-ish creator Kenya Barris, who recently left ABC for a lucrative deal at Netflix, based the series on his own family, and he's made serious issues a key component of the show. At times, ABC has seen Black-ish as a little too controversial for primetime. Last season, the network canceled an episode, reportedly about black NFL players taking a knee during the national anthem. When Ross joined me in studio, we started by talking about an episode called Mother Nature. It deals with postpartum depression.
You know what might be fun?
What?
If we take this postpartum depression quiz together.
Trey, I don't want to do that. I'm okay.
Totally. Totally. But I think we should take it just in case one of us has a debilitating mood disorder. Okay? So I'll go first. Do you feel sad, hopeless, overwhelmed, empty? That's a nope for me. How about you?
Well, I don't know. I feel sad.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel hopeless and I feel overwhelmed, but I don't feel empty, so I guess it's a no for me.
Oy.
I mean, it's really real.
Yeah.
And that feels like something that is so integral to the show that even as you're telling a joke, you are delving into tough topics.
Yeah, it's one of the things I love about our show so much, because there's a way that our comedy comes from character, from life, from actual experience, as opposed to bump-a-dump-bump, you know? And what I find really interesting, both as an actor and a watcher of our show, and postpartum, we refer to it as postpartum that episode because it was about postpartum, but it's called Mother Nature. And to deal with any sort of mental health, mental illness, any of that in the Black community is, I felt really proud of our show for opening up the box, especially on postpartum in a way that you just don't see on television and you rarely see with Black families and is really important in the Black community.
Do you think the show is watched differently based on who you are? If you're Black person versus a white person, do you think it really has something different for audiences depending yeah. on their ethnicity? And how would you define that difference?
I don't know if it's different by ethnicity, but I think it's different individually. I mean, I hear that across the board when I run into people. I have people that come up to me and say, oh my God, my mother-in-law is like my relationship with my mother-in-law is exactly like you and Ruby. Or they come up to me and say, oh my God, I had that conversation with my son. And I think that's the mark of a really good show. And part of what is so lovely about us as a Black family being an American family, that whether you're Black or not, you are identifying with us as a family.
Kenya has talked about how for this show and for Grown-ish, he wants to populate his writer's room with people who have different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So they are challenging him. They're offering up ideas and stories that may be unique to their backgrounds that he wants to hear about. How would you say the actors' backgrounds and perspectives affect the show itself? Because they have their own stories, they have their own views of things.
Not
is there
so much.
A way that that Mm-mm. you have a voice in all of that, or just...
Well, I absolutely have a voice, but I have a voice in how I breathe life into Beau. But my own personal background is not a part of the story. I mean, Bo is very different from me. I think Dre is similar to Anthony. I mean, that's, you know, that's where the show kind of, the genesis of the show is between Kenya and Anthony, and seeing a gap in a story of this kind of black man on television, and sort of the unfolding of how you make sense of a family in this context, you know? But no, not for me. Does that answer that question?
And yeah, and knows what she's talking about. I mean, there's a little incident conversation in the past season about your character's one-year-old and about whether or not he should be walking. Your husband thinks he should be, and you're like, don't worry about it, and I know what I'm talking about.
I'm a doctor.
Yeah. It's like, I think he says, we need to see a doctor. And you say, I am a doctor.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the running joke, is that Bo says it all the time. But I also think she says it all the time because it's ignored.
Hey, Pops, You really should get checked out.
You know what? I'm going to set you up with an appointment at the hospital so you can get a quick and easy physical.
Okay, fine. I'll let one of those butchers look me over.
You know I'm one of those butchers, right?
I'm not saying you're a butcher.
Okay. Mm,
unless you count what she did to this meal.
You said something earlier that I was struck by, that you are a actor in and a watcher of Black-ish. Mm-hmm. What is the distinction?
They're just two different things. I do actually watch the show, and I like the show. I just think it's a really funny show. And sometimes I'm really tickled and proud, not as me on the show, but that a show like our show exists, and that there's a show on TV that's unpacking these kinds of things and unpacking them with love and with humor and with an open-heartedness, and that we are not attempting to answer a lot of these questions, but instead pose them. And that we get to see all these very different points of view, and it's all in the arms of an embrace on our show, which I think we need more of in our world right now.
Coming up, Tracy Ellis Ross discusses the departure of Black-ish creator Kenya Barris. And later on the show, we'll hear about a play that's left behind the theater in favor of a stage on a horse ranch outside L.A.
KPCC podcasts are supported by UCLA's Center for the Art of Performance, presenting political pundit and cultural raconteur Fran Lebowitz in conversation with Matt Holzman, Sunday, September 30th at 7 p.m. at the Theater at Ace Hotel. A sharp-tongued social critic and keen observer of the irony of human behavior, Lebowitz is often described as a modern-day Dorothy Parker and is known for her sarcasm, wit, and outrageous positions on current affairs and contemporary culture. Tickets at cap.ucla.edu.
Now let's get back to my conversation with Tracy Ellis Ross. She plays Rainbow Johnson in the ABC series Black-ish. As they gear up for season 5, the cast and crew is dealing with the fact that the show's creator, Kenya Barris, has departed ABC for Netflix. He will still remain an executive producer on the show. We pick up our conversation with how Ross thinks the show will fare without Barris at the helm.
Well, we are only 2 episodes in, but I will tell you, you know, last season, like by 4th season, your executive producer is not always like hands on in right. on the floor and with you. First season, second season, third season, he was on the floor. We saw him all the time. I think it's a gradual transition, but it's also a normal transition. I think it came about in a very public and uncomfortable way. So there's a lot more attention on it that way. But I mean, Shonda Rhimes can't be hands-on on her 17 million shows that she does.
Like, I thought it was only 16 million.
Now. I think it's up to 17 million now. You know, so I think there's a way that these things naturally evolve and progress. But what he established is present. The tone of our show, that writer's room and sort of how it works and all of that. He established something that is now in our bones and in our DNA. Whether we like it or not, it's there. You know, we have a home base to go to in terms of what we know is Bo, what we know is Dre, what the dynamics of our show are. And he's around if we need to call him.
This past season, you directed an episode
about
the difficulties in your character's marriage. It's called 53%, a reference to divorce statistics. And there's a scene I want to play. It's between you and Anthony Anderson, and you've been instructed by a couple's therapist to have a date night. And as soon as you order dinner, which is its own kind of ordeal, the date night goes downhill pretty fast. Let's listen to what happens.
Mm-hmm. You look nice.
You don't have to do that.
No, I mean it, babe. You look nice.
Thank you. It's actually really nice to hear.
Actually? I compliment you all the time.
Okay, Dre.
You say that like I don't compliment you. Babe, I compliment you.
Okay.
More than you compliment me.
That's why I said okay, Dre.
Uh-huh.
Because no matter what I said, you would turn it into a big deal because you turn everything into a big deal.
And how quickly the threads pull apart.
Based on one word, actually. I mean, I think this is very realistic. This is a conversation that I've had in my marriage,
yeah.
A conversation a lot of people have probably had in their marriages. How do you approach, because you directed this, getting that right? Because obviously you're telling jokes, you're making fun, but you are trying to make sure that what you're representing in a fictional family is something that real people can understand as being something that could have and maybe actually did happen in their own lives.
You know, the role as a director obviously is very different than the role as an actor. But on our show, we have very well-written material. So that is a number one. Number two, if I may speak as the director, not as the actor, we have really...
Do you speak to your actors that way? You do the kind of the fake English accent? Do you
Sure, okay. As the director, I can say that we have wonderful actors on our show. So tweaking and finding reality in a performance was not and is not the hard part when you come in as a director on our show. For me, the challenging part with this episode is it was the beginning of a 4-episode arc, and we were doing something we hadn't done before. Usually the whatever we're diving into is outside of the relationship,
right.
And the core of the show is our love and enjoying of each other. And that is what was pulling apart in the episode that I directed. And it was the beginning of it. So it was that like awkward weirdness. So for me, it was really finding what was the awkward thing and how do we find the balance of not making it a full out fight or a full out disconnect, but that sort of in-between awkward place between Dre and Beau. And so that took a little bit of... It just took some real conversation with Anthony and I both, and then we would try and find it in the scene.
What do you hope the show can say more of? I mean, I think Kenya said that he felt last season the show really became what he wanted it to be.
Oh, good.
Do you think?
I've never heard him say that. I'm happy to hear that.
No, he said,
I think we achieved that in second season, but, but I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe it's a work in progress. But what do you think else can be? Where do you see it going? And what gets you excited about the stories that are left to be told?
I think there's a lot left to be told. I think there's some wonderful exploration to happen with the kids. They're such wonderful actors, and watching them kind of take on story. And, you know, the thing I talked to the producers about before we started back this season was in the beginning, Beau and Dre and this family were people that sort of were figments of someone's imagination, you know, and they could kind of dream them up in the writer's room. But now, to a certain extent, they're people. Like, Beau and Dre have their own history that we've all evidenced on screen. So some of the story is now coming out of not who they imagined them to be, but who they actually have become. And it's fantastic. You know, I think it was based on Kenya and his wife, but Beau Johnson is not Beau Barris. They are two very different people at this point, both from the way I've played her and the way she interacts with Dre. So I think there's a ton to explore.
We're talking with Tracy Ellis Ross about Black-ish. One of the things that the show does is it takes an issue and it has people looking at that issue and debating that issue.
Yeah.
And it can be really serious issues.
Yeah.
It can be something like kneeling during national anthem. It could be about Juneteenth, the day that we recognize the abolition of slavery. And Kenya, as a show creator, has strong ideas about what he wants the show to be. So how would you describe...
Well, I'm gonna stop you first to say that you said an episode about kneeling. That is everyone's impression that that's what the episode was about.
Protest? I mean, what would you say?
Not mine to answer.
Okay.
But you said it as if it were fact, and I just want to
dispute
that.
I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm. So yes, we did a Juneteenth episode. There's been a gun control episode.
Right.
There's been a police brutality episode.
Spanking episode.
There's been a spanking episode. These are not, if you line them up, you don't think, well, that's a funny show. But yes, the stories that we tell that could be considered controversial, but the way we handle them are not controversial. We do them within the embrace of an open heart. So now to your question, now that I cut you off.
No, it's okay. No, it's a good point. I think Kenya is an advocate for the show. And I think every producer is an advocate for the show. But what he's advocating is sometimes a little bit different from what other showrunners are doing. It's like, this is a story that needs to be told, and it may be difficult for you all, but we have to do it. The network is like, that
mostly not.
Okay.
I mean, no, you see all the episodes that have been on the air. I think our network has been extremely supportive. The specifics of what happened around that quote unquote supposed kneeling episode, honestly, I have stayed out of it. It is obviously a lot went down, but my take on it has really been, I don't know how constructive or helpful or useful it is for me to have information that perhaps might upset me, that I really can't do anything about.
Okay.
Is kind of how I feel about that. We all know that I have quite a big mouth in terms of speaking up for things that I... for justice and for freedom and for equality and for women's rights and equal pay. And I have a courage about how I speak up. This is not one for me to speak up on. I don't have enough information.
This show has been, from the very beginning, very good about depicting women in positive ways.
Mm.
How important is it to you that Black-ish gets that right and that it hires women behind the camera, in front of the camera, and tells stories that are relevant and truthful to the female experience?
Well, I mean, let's be clear. Our show is told through Dre's eyes. This is not Bo's story. She kind of acts like a guide to a certain extent. But what I have done, because these are things that are very important to me, is I have really made it my mission to make sure that Bo is fully represented. And I question a lot, and I push back in places that I see things that someone else might not have seen. Sometimes they're small, like, why am I carrying laundry? Sometimes they're big, like, what am I just playing ping pong right here, just sitting in between because I got dressed and put makeup on? Like, what's my point of view in the scene? And if that's pointed out to them and it's something that hasn't been noticed, it's fixed, you know? So I think Bo represents something very strong. She is not wife wallpaper on a show that is traditional in its makeup, in that it is told through the male's eyes. She is still a very full woman that you can tell has a life off screen.
Tracy, thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
And one quick postscript. When we originally aired that interview with Ross last month, her Black-ish co-star, Anthony Anderson, was facing an allegation of sexual assault by a woman not associated with the show. Yesterday, the L.A. District Attorney announced that no charges would be filed against Anderson. Coming up, a play about climate change is being staged at a horse ranch in the San Fernando Valley. You'll find out why coming up next. And now a story about a timely theater production. On July 23rd, the Carr Fire in Northern California was ignited, and it soon became one of the most destructive wildfires in state history. Fire officials say hotter and drier weather, along with droughts, will only make such blazes more common. The Carr Fire was finally fully contained on August 30th, but for the people of Scott Valley, indeed for all Californians, catastrophic wildfires could soon become the new normal as climate change continues to worsen. Now, climate change and how we are responding to it is the subject of a new play commissioned by the LA-based Circle X Theater Company. Frame contributor Marcos Najera has our story.
Octavio Solis is a man of many hats.
Welcome back, amigos. Anything to declare?
That's him voicing a character in Disney's Coco.
Just a slightly quicker tempo.
Sure.
Because I love that. I think it's.
And that's him working with a cast member during rehearsal for his new play, Hole in the Sky, at a horse ranch in the San Fernando Valley near Sunland.
Wash my soul clean!
And while Solis is mainly a playwright by trade and an occasional actor, he's picked up a new profession these days. He's also a farmer.
We decided to change our lives and just become live in a more rural environment. We just needed a change from San Francisco, from the big city.
Octavio and his wife Jeannie now live on a 3-acre ranch, not far from Octavio's current artistic home base, the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. They moved there about 4 years ago. That was also about the time when he got a call from Circle X Theater's Kate Jobson, who was fresh out of her MFA directing program.
Hi, I was just finishing graduate school at UC San Diego. And in my life,
Jobson met Solis back in 2010 when she helped stage one of his plays in the San Francisco Bay Area. Solis encouraged her to go for a directing MFA. She took his advice, but her life took a turn.
In my last month, as I was supposed to be finishing up my thesis, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And then I had to come to LA, find all new doctors, do all the surgeries, do the radiation, do all that in my first few months in Los Angeles. So that was my welcome to LA.
So yeah, if we can get you forward sooner, that's a great idea.
That was really this shift for me and a big moment of change in my life. And
Jobson says being sick made her think more about wellness, including the health of our planet. So she told Solis that she wanted to create a piece of theater with him about water, people, and fire, and the strife those factors create for Scott Valley, the area in rural Northern California she calls home. It's not far from where the Car Fire still burns, and only about an hour's drive from Solis's ranch. Solis interviewed ranchers, tribal members, environmentalists, and politicians in Scott Valley and throughout Siskiyou County. He asked them how they were solving the problems that arise as the Earth's temperature climbs. Those conversations became his new play. Solis says the fictionalized story revolves around true fights over local groundwater and streams.
The Scott River is one of the rivers that people have been drawing from for years for their water, for irrigation, and for their cattle. Every year, that river has had less and less water in it. It's become a kind of problem because there's less snowpack in the mountains every year. Sometimes there is none. It doesn't snow.
Low levels in the waterways means tough times for local Native American tribes who depend on healthy salmon runs to keep their hatcheries and fisheries afloat, says Solis. On the flip side, the farmers and ranchers need to draw out the river water and groundwater reserves to irrigate crops and hydrate cattle.
They're all kind of at odds with each other. And somewhere in between is the truth.
And that's when conflicts come. From legal battles to town hall squabbles, fights over water rights can pit neighbor against neighbor.
And somewhere in there, we have to find ways to kind of take care of each other and not attack each other.
To capture the spirit of the rural region where the story is set, Solis and Jobson agreed to stage the production at a working horse ranch here in L.A. The Courtship Ranch was a fitting choice. The Creek Fire came dangerously close to destroying it last December. That blaze prompted fire officials to issue warnings that dry conditions and higher than normal temperatures signaled more trouble ahead.
The people who are seeing its effects the most immediately are the ones who are most resistant to kind of say it's climate change. And why? Because they've seen this before.
Again, here's director Kate Jobson.
And that's part of what this is how do we overcome our personal traumas and be able to really come together to face these larger issues like changing climates, droughts, fires, these things that are happening to us that we feel powerless against sometimes.
Connor.
It's no dream, Daddy, no dream at all. I see it there upon the ridge there.
The protagonist of the show is named Connor Bledsoe, the prodigal daughter who comes home to find her town fighting over water and threatened by wildfire. The character is inspired in part by Jobson, who grew up with people always disagreeing about the environment. Jobson says her dad still raises trees back home, and her mom is a water biologist who helped negotiate water trusts in the area.
One of the projects my mom worked on when I was really little was getting the river in our valley fenced off from cattle so it would be clean water.
Jobson recalls how community members, including her mom, came to a compromise.
It's not that you never bring cattle through the water, especially if your ranch is divided by the river. It's just that we find ways to minimize that, to fence different sections of it off. And so it's finding those kind of compromises sometimes that aren't all or nothing solutions that people can still live with.
Both Jobson and Solis hope their new play can offer glimpses into different viewpoints where no one is really right and no one is really wrong. But all can agree that there's much work to do and much more to learn.
We haven't seen drought, and yet we confront it every night. Every time there's a moon up there, there's a place that is beautiful. Gets sun almost every day, you know, but not a drop of water. And we look at it and we forget. That's what this could be. There it is, like a hole in the sky.
For The Frame, I'm Marcos Nájera.
Hole in the Sky is being performed through September 23rd at the Courtship Ranch in Lakeview Terrace. For more information, go to circlextheater.org. And that is our show for today. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. You will find us at The Frame. I'm John Horn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.